Mana prasara saumyatvam maunamatma vinigraha bhava samsudirite tathapomana samuchyate.
Translation. And satisfaction, simplicity, gravity, self-control, purification of one's existence are the austerities of the mind. Purport. To make the mind austere is to detach it from sense gratification. It should be so trained that it can be always thinking of doing good for others. The best training for the mind is gravity and thought. One should not deviate from Krishna consciousness and must always avoid sense gratification. To purify one's nature is to become Krishna conscious. Satisfaction of the mind can be obtained only by taking the mind away from thoughts of sense enjoyment. The more we think of sense enjoyment, the more the mind becomes dissatisfied. In the present age, we unnecessarily engage the mind in so many different ways for sense gratification, and there's no possibility of the mind's becoming satisfied. The best course is to divert the mind to the Vedic literature, which is full of satisfying stories, as in the Puranas and the Mahabharata. One can take advantage of this knowledge and thus become purified. The mind should be devoid of duplicity, and one should think of the welfare of all. Silence means that one is always thinking of self-realization. The person in Krishna consciousness observes perfect silence in this sense. Control of the mind means detaching the mind from sense enjoyment. One should be straightforward in his dealings and thereby purify his existence. All these qualities together constitute austerity in mental activities. And the verse again. Mana prasada samya tvam maunam atma vinigra bhava samsudiriti tat tapamana samuchyate. And satisfaction, simplicity, gravity, self-control and purification of one's existence are the austerities of the mind. So in this part of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is speaking about different divisions of faith. And as we can see in this part of the Bhagavad Gita, or in this section especially, Krishna is speaking about the different modes of nature. Like he's been explaining the influence of the different modes of nature upon eating, upon activities, austerities, charity. And now he has come to the point of defining the austerities. How was this? Food. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, he just finished speaking about sacrifices in different modes. And now he's coming to he's speaking about these were actually austerities that he was explaining, the mode of goodness. And he was referring in this verse in particular, he was speaking about the austerities in relation to the mind. And then there was also in the former verse, in the previous verse, he was talking about austerity in relationship to speech. And austerity, in the verse before, austerity in relationship to the body, or better to say, the senses. Maybe we should read all the three verses again to get a better understanding of the contents. So, starting with 14, so today we will read 16, now we start with 14 again. Austerity of the body consists in worship of the Supreme Lord, the Brahmanas, the spiritual master, and superiors like the father and mother, and in cleanliness, simplicity, celibacy, and non-violence. And then it goes on, austerity of speech consists in speaking words that are truthful, pleasing, beneficial, and not agitating to others, and also in regularly reciting Vedic literature. Today's verse, and satisfaction, simplicity, gravity, self-control, and purification of one's existence are the austerities of the mind. This threefold austerity performed with transcendental faith by men not expecting material benefits, but engaged only for the sake of the Supreme, is called austerity in goodness. So these kind of austerities are the austerities that are really recommended. Because they actually bring us real benefit, lasting benefit. Whereas the austerities described in the next verses, like for example here, next verse, penance performed out of foolishness with self-torture or to destroy or injure others is said to be the mode of ignorance. Penance performed out of pride for the sake of gained respect, honor, and worship is said to be the mode of passion. It is neither stable nor permanent. No, we can see in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also, in one verse in the ninth chapter, he says, everything that you do, all that you eat, and so on, should be done for me. So even austerities, they also should actually be executed exclusively for Krishna, right? Or at least one should practice these austerities for spiritual elevation. They have actually no other real purpose. Just like it says here, that austerity is executed in the mode of passion. They only give us temporary benefits. Material benefits. Whereas when we take to austerities in the mode of goodness, gradually we become more and more detached, we'll become more and more knowledgeable, and we become more determined in surrendering to the Supreme Person of Godhead. So this is the real meaning of austerity. Tapasya is actually meant to, as a method, a way, practice, to situate oneself in the transcendental position, to detach oneself from the material environment, and to become fixed on the transcendental platform. Undoubtedly also the impersonalists, they also practice austerities, they also do all this that is mentioned here. But in the ultimate instance, because they don't become situated, fixed in their position as eternal servants of Krishna, they'd actually never become perfect. Perfect in the sense, just like a sense of Bhagavatam, like mukti is defined as achieving or fixing oneself, situating oneself in the position, in one's original position. Constitutional position as servants of Krishna, and liberating oneself from all activities that are not related to Krishna. That's the real meaning of mukti. Mukti doesn't mean that one just becomes free from the cycle of birth and death, or that one becomes purified only, not like this. But actually mukti means to recover one's constitutional position as eternal servant of Krishna. So in this way, austerities become very meaningful. There's so much talk nowadays that all austerities are artificial. But actually, austerities are very, very important. Bhagavatam said, without tapasya, one cannot advance spiritually. Just like if we're always very comfortable, then we're looking for a very comfortable position, then we cannot really make advancement in spiritual life. We have to be ready to accept things that a little difficult. Not just like we can see practically when we get up early in the morning. It might be very difficult. But the benefit is so incredible. Just by getting up early in the morning and taking to the practice of chanting the holy names and hearing from the Bhagavatam and assisting, you know, and all these activities that Srila Prabhupada gave us or prescribed us, we can actually feel happiness, just like we were talking this morning. The more one becomes purified, the more the ananda, the blissfulness, becomes manifest. Not just like Prabhupada used to say many times that our material condition is nothing else but sickness. No, it's a kind of sickness. Just like when you are sick and you have fever, you know, the solution is not to increase the fever. But the solution is to bring the fever or the temperature to its normal, level. And the normal level is that we're Krishna conscious. If we just increase, you know, by our activities, we just increase our material entanglement or our lust and greed for sense gratification. That is the symptom that we are actually becoming more and more sick. So just like the Bhagavatam says, when you become Krishna conscious, naturally, just by serving Vasudeva, Krishna, and becoming attracted by Krishna, naturally you become liberated from the attraction to Maya, to sense gratification. That just goes hand in hand. The more we become attracted to sense gratification, the more we lose interest in Krishna. And the more we become attracted to Krishna, the more we lose our desire for sense gratification. That's a real symptom of advancement in Krishna consciousness. Sense gratification and devotional service doesn't go together. Just like Prabhupada used to say, fire and water doesn't go together. You try to get some fire going. If you keep on throwing water on the fire, naturally the fire won't grow, won't go on. So that's actually a completely ridiculous kind of activity. So in the same way, devotees must be very careful not to only accept what is favorable in devotional service and somehow or other reject what is not favorable in devotional service. That's actually our austerity. The senses naturally are attracted to the sense objects. Just like I remember Prabhupada gave one explanation once. He said that in all different kinds of species, the tendency to be sinful, for illicit sex, not necessarily sinful, but for illicit sex, for intoxication, and if all these tendencies are all there. And then Prabhupada gave the example of the ant. He was just giving a practical example. There was an Indian there when he was speaking. There's many, many ants everywhere. If you leave some food laying around, some sugar or some sweet ball or something, within no time, some messenger, some ant messenger has come and has recognized a big mountain of sugar, and immediately the ants come walking by the thousands of millions. They make all kinds of little streets, and they come and take away the sugar. And Prabhupada was saying that this is actually why the ants are so attracted to the sugar, because intoxication. They got some intoxication from that. So this tendency is there everywhere. But right now, we are very fortunate because we can actually discover spiritual happiness. This expression is so nice. Discover. Discover. Take the cover away. Take the cover away. Because actually we are Krishna conscious. We eternal servants of Krishna.
then all it requires to take away the cover, to become free from all that is anatta, all that is artificial or unnecessary. Just like this afternoon somebody came to see me, the Grihastha. And this devotee, he always tries to convince me that I need a new jacket, I need a new pullover, and my socks are too old, I have to get some new ones. And some new kind of pants, and how can I only have one pair of pants? I should have two pairs of pants. And it's very difficult to convince him. Don't tell him this, what I'm saying. Because it's actually very nice. But he doesn't know. It's very difficult for him to understand that there's something else that actually is more important. So you always try to convince me that I give up this and give up, and I get some new things. And I'm always telling him, look, I don't, maybe the thing I'm using is old, but I need it. I want it, because when I get something new, I just become bewildered, because I always think, oh, I got something new. It's very difficult to make people understand this, especially when they come all, when they all come, always come with a gift. They want to convince the Swamis that they have to have a new pullover and this and that. Of course it's nice, the attitude is very nice, but for the Swami, or for the person who's trying to renounce the world, it's difficult to manage all these things, to accept all these things. So, just another example. I'm not so renounced really, but it just, by my experience I know that it's much more simple to limit one's possessions to what one actually needs, especially when one travels. Isn't it a fact? When one is traveling all the time, and every now and then, nobody comes and gets one, And then one has to walk around with big case and this and that. And then one becomes, then actually one realizes how much weight one is carrying around. Isn't it a fact? Yeah. Because here it's not noticed so much. Because in this part of the world they have these big cars and all that. But other places, or you have to carry your own luggage, actually one can realize. One actually realizes how much unnecessary luggage or weight one is carrying around all the time. Anyway, so coming back to this point here. Austerity in the mode of goodness is very important. Because by this kind of austerity, one actually purifies one's existence. Srila Prabhupada is explaining here austerity in the mode of ignorance. Sometimes we see refined people practicing austerities to force others to do certain things. Just like, for example, I've never seen it here, but I've seen it in other parts of the world, where they have a lot of Gewerkschaften. How is Gewerkschaften? Unions, worker unions. And they always make their manifestation. Oh, they fast, they go to the plaza, and fast, for days, just to call the attention of the newspapers. And then after a while they lay down, and they become all pale like this. This kind of austerity, politically motivated, is actually, like it says in the Bhagavad Gita, it's actually in the mode of ignorance. Where it says here that you torture yourself and you torture others. And actually what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, even the Paramatma, the Super Soul, becomes tortured and disturbed. Krishna becomes disturbed by these unnecessary austerities, which are not really meant for spiritual upliftment. And then also we see, for example, Hiranyakashipu, he performed great austerities. He was standing on the tip of his feet, like this, and with his hands raised like that, for 125 years without moving. And why did he do all this? Just to bring the demigods under his control. just to conquer the universe, just to be the biggest. And what he didn't know, what he didn't realize, in his passionate mood, is actually within the universe, within the material world, everyone is mortal. Everyone has to die. So he wanted to become immortal. So why did he do all these austerities? Just to control the demigods, just to become invincible in a fight against Vishnu. And for what? Just for sense gratification. Normally Prabhupada says that these kind of persons, the mode of passion, ignorance, they worship the demigods, they don't worship God. Normally the person from the mode of ignorance worship mostly the Buddhas and Shiva and like that. There's many demons mentioned in the Bhagavatam that were performing great austerities just to get some power or some weapon to kill some enemy. Just as it's typical, this very, very nice example given by Srila Prabhupada. There was a worship of Lord Shiva, and he was so austere. He started, with a knife, he started cutting the meat from his own body and offering it in the fire sacrifice, to Shiva. And so Shiva became very disturbed. Can you imagine somebody making some austerity to please you with his own meat, throwing the meat in the fire? So Shiva appeared and he said, "Stop this nonsense. What do you want?" And then this person said, "Oh, I want this benediction that simply by touching somebody's head, this head would crack into 1,000 pieces." What an absurd thing to ask. So then Shiva gave him the benediction. And the first thing the demon thought that, "Let me try this out on Shiva's head." So he started running after Shiva. And Shiva was running for his, was running and running. And the demon was running behind him trying to touch his head. So then Shiva took shelter in Vishnu, in Krishna. So he told him what had happened. And so Krishna said, "Okay, don't worry, I take care of this demon." So he assumed the form of a little boy, innocent. Sometimes Krishna does it, because little boys or little children, they're so innocent, everybody trusts them, nobody thinks they will speak a lie. Normally everybody trusts little children. Like for example, sometimes a little child comes and walks into the neighbor's apartment. It just walks around and the neighbor even, thinks that, becomes like kind of mystified by the child because it's a little child. These children have this mystic power that everyone, becomes like, attracted and starts to play with him and all that. In the same way also, when Vishnu assumed the form of a little child, the demon came running and he didn't think anything bad about the child. Didn't think that this was, some trick or something. But he just asked if he had seen Shiva. And then the little child said, "Oh, what's going on? Why?" And then he said, "Yes, I got the benediction, touched somebody's head and cracked it in 1,000 pieces." And then the little child said, very innocently, he said, "Ah, really? How do you know it works? Maybe he cheated you." And then the demon became like confused. He thought, "Yeah, maybe, this maybe." And so then the child said, "Why don't you try it out first?" And he couldn't think of anything better than touching his own head. And fell into 1,000 pieces. So these kind of benedictions, and these kind of austerities are performed by demons, by low creatures, just to get some absurd kind of benediction. And there's many others mentioned in the Shastras. And Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita, those whose intelligence has been stolen, they actually worship the demigods for some temporary benefits. And all these temporary benefits means that they're all limited by time and space. They just last very shortly. And in the end, these benefits turn out to be nothing, because they're not related to our eternal existence. Whereas only those kind of austerities perform the mode of goodness, and they can actually help us to achieve real benefits. But austerities have to be performed. Now, even in the material realm, we have to perform austerities. Just like we can see many times now that devotees who unfortunately have left the movement, and they dedicate to all kinds of other activities now. They find themselves also executing austerities. No, they go to school, and they have to work, like never before, And they start accepting jobs, and they have to also work. There's no more just like now when I was in one other place in Nuremberg, a whole group of devotees came to see me. Came to the program that we made. They're all living outside, and they're all working in one factory now together. And the one devotee told me, "Oh, it's very nice. We get a lot of money, but I cannot take my midday break anymore. In the temple, I could always rest, take a nap after eating or something like that. Now I have to work from morning 8 to
7.
For 7. From 7 in the morning till when was it? To 7.
6, 7, 8.
Yeah.
It's a marathon.
No. So you can just see. Let me tell you another thing. There was once in Buenos Aires, we had a pujari. And that pujari, he somehow became bewildered. So then he became like, under the influence of the modes of nature, he became like possessed. Eager for prestige and sense gratification on it. So at one point he didn't want to be a pujari anymore. And he said, "Never again I will surrender like that, Baba, so much work and all that." So he went home. And his mother thought it was very nice, and her son had come back, and she never liked Krishna consciousness very much anyway. She thought it was a big waste of time. So then he came back home. So she told him, "Now look, tomorrow I will go on vacations. You have to stay here to take care of the apartment. And with the apartment, you have to take care of all my animals. A dog, a cat, a few birds, I know what, a lot of other things." So she told him, "Now you have to, every day, you have to cook for them, and you have to bathe them. You have to clean their stalls, and all this." So when I heard that, it made just perfect sense. Before he was worshipping and cooking and cleaning for the Supreme Person of Godhead. And then he rejected that. He didn't want to do it anymore. And he went home and he had to worship animals. just like Prabhupada used to say, you either worship God or you worship dog. In English, it's so nice. Because it's just contrary. The word God and dog is just the other way around. So you either worship God, or you worship dog. people do not want to serve God, they don't want to surrender to God. But if they don't want to worship God and surrender to God, then they're forced to worship Maya and worship all these products of Maya. And they have to be austere. They have to make their sacrifices. They have to do so many things, and if they don't do, then they suffer. Whereas in Krishna consciousness, everything is voluntary. You either voluntarily surrender, or you forced to surrender. Just like Prabhupada used to say, gave an example. He said, either you make your obeisances voluntarily, like a dandabat, all Maya forces to make you. When you die, you also lay flat. You know, that's your last thunderbolt. You either you do it voluntarily, and you practice, during your life, during the time when you have all the faculties together, everything works nicely, and you're full of energy, or you're forced. That's why it says in the material world, the material life, it's actually just like a perverted reflection of real life. The real life, or the real substance, the reality, is somewhere else. Whereas in the material world, like we explained this morning, or when was it? Yeah, yes, this morning. It's just like a shadow world. And we never be satisfied in relation with the shadow only, unless we come in touch with the substance, we never become satisfied. So, just like it says here, according to the modes of nature, all our activities, our natural tendencies, activities, they all become filtered through the modes of nature. When the filter is very thin, then it's called the mode of goodness. When the filter is a little grosser, it's the mode of passion. And when the filter is very gross, then it becomes the mode of ignorance. And the influence of the mode of the influence of the mode of ignorance, things become completely reversed. Just like it says in the Bhagavad Gita, somebody under the influence of the mode of ignorance, he becomes very much attracted, or spontaneously attracted, to all kinds of activities that actually are self-destructive. many times we have given the example of, Prabhupada gave the example of smoking. Smoking is so absurd, it doesn't really have any benefit. It's just for the tongue. That means little, the smoke passing, above the tongue, creating some chemical reaction within the mouth or whatever. But it's a very, very risky business. Now even the karmis, scientists have come to the conclusion that smoking is very hazardous to health. Just like in America now, I heard that they're making big, big court cases against the cigarette and tobacco industry, and trying to get millions and millions of dollars from them as recompense. What was that? Reward. For all the damage they created by lung cancer and so many things, so many illnesses that smoking has created. and there's many other things. There's so much talk about all that poisoned meat or infested meat nowadays. That comes from Britain. They're fighting about that meat, and so many other things that are actually banned by civilized societies like the Vedic societies. These things are naturally banned, prohibited. And it was the duty of the governments to see that people were actually protected against all these disturbances. But nowadays, because of the mode of passion, ignorance, becoming more and more prominent, all these activities are becoming very, very freely, destructive things are becoming very accessible to everybody. Every now and then there's an appearance of the mode of goodness also. Just like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the modes of nature are always fighting for dominion. Sometimes the mode of passion is dominant, sometimes the mode of ignorance is dominant, sometimes the mode of goodness dominates. So when the mode of goodness when the different modes of nature, like goodness, passion, or ignorance, dominate, all these symptoms of those modes become prominent. Like people say today, they use this word paradigma. That different paradigmas become manifest. Just like this morning we were speaking about what is natural. What is natural for a person in the mode of ignorance is not natural for a person in the mode of passion. And what is natural for a person in the mode of goodness is not natural for a person that is in the mode of passion and ignorance. That's what is explained in this chapter in particular, the Bhagavad Gita, where the influence of the different modes are described very nicely. When there's an increase in the mode of goodness, naturally people become very interested in self-realization and natural life and health, good relations, and moral principles and all that. When the mode of passion dominates, everyone becomes very fruitive. Everyone is thinking only of economic development, of one's prestige, position, gain, personal gain. Everyone is simply working to situate himself in a better position, to get a big position. They study, they learn, just to get a better position. And when the mood of ignorance dominates, things become very, very crazy. There's places, nowadays you sometimes hear from places where they have constant war and revolutions and the governments change every week. And I remember there was a war some years ago, not a war. United Nations tried to get some peace going in Sudan, was it Sudan, somewhere there? And they had all these groups of bandits controlling the whole country. and they actually couldn't do anything. They couldn't get anywhere. There were many people starving by hunger, because of hunger, but they couldn't bring the food in, because they would always steal the food, and all the mafia would just ruin all their efforts to bring the food to the people. Or there's also places where the governments and the public leaders, they're all so corrupt that people feel so unprotected. They elect somebody, and then after months or two, he's discovered as a cheater who just enriched himself with tax money and this and that. So these are all symptoms of the mode of ignorance. So Prabhupada used to say that we should at least situate ourselves in the mode of goodness, because the mode of goodness is very favorable. It's the best platform to advance from, to make advancement in spiritual life. It's natural, it's very easy to understand. When you're peaceful and you're healthy and you are philosophically inclined, you are awake to understand, or eager to understand reality, then spiritual realization becomes there's more facility for spiritual realization. Whereas when you're disturbed and you're full of anxiety all the time, and you're troubled by so many external and internal disturbances, then there's no peace. You can't fix, you cannot concentrate properly. Just many times when we preach, we go out and preach, or we distribute books or something like that. Normally, devotees meet so many people who say, yeah, I think it's good, but I have no time. I actually have no time. Actually, I have two jobs or three jobs. I'm just going to get to finish my second job today. And I have so many debts, and I have no time. So this way, actually, are very unfortunate. And we can see how people are becoming more unfortunate everywhere because of the increase of an increase of the mode of passion ignorance. Whereas in former times, like we learned from the Srimad Bhagavatam, for example, no, where there are some descriptions of other ages, just like it's sometimes very difficult to understand how people would live just by having faith in God. Just like the Brahmins, for example. They were voluntarily keeping themselves poor. Why? Because in this way they would be more conscious of their dependence on God. That Krishna was actually maintaining them. Krishna was protecting them. When you always surround yourself with so much opulence and security and insurance and all that, it's more difficult to feel your dependence on God. Just like Prabhupada explained that how the different castes, the different varnas, were actually classified by their faith in God. Like the Brahmanas were those who had firm faith in God. And even though they had nothing, they would be the most peaceful and the most balanced, more tolerant, compassionate. Then the Kshatriyas, Kshatriya mentality is they always have to have their own power, position, control. So Prabhupada, in this context, he was saying that this was because the Kshatriyas did not have full faith. They had to make their own arrangements to be more peaceful. They had to have some money, some power, some control. Then the Vaishyas. Unless the Vaishya has a lot of money, he's full of anxiety. He's full of anxiety. And the Shudra is always full of anxiety. That's why Shudra also means somebody who laments all the time. He's always lamenting, he's always full of anxiety. He's never satisfied. He distrusts everybody. He's always envious with others. And actually, Prabhupada used to say Shudra means rascal. That you can't trust the Shudra. You have to always keep an eye on him. And they have, normally they don't have much faith. Not only that, but actually we have experienced that when somebody has very much a Shudra mentality, normally because of that ignorance that covers that person, he even blasphemes or criticizes or makes jokes about people who are more in the mode of goodness. For example, for a person in the mode of ignorance, it's completely ridiculous to dress like that. It makes no sense. Also for a person with a mode of passion, normally, it makes no sense. That's why when they see devotees, they spontaneously start laughing, grinning, laughing, and think that these devotees are crazy. Whereas a person in the mode of goodness has, it's a more, it's a little bit of respect at least there, and kind of appreciation, and anyway. So this is how the modes of nature have us under control. And the only way to become free from the influence of the modes of nature is to revive our Krishna consciousness. The more we become Krishna conscious, the more the modes of nature keep away, stay away. Just like Krishna is in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Amchayo vyavicharina bhakti yogena sevate sagunam samadhi tetan brahma vachaya prayavate. He says that one maintains himself fixed in devotional service without deviating. Immediately transcends the modes or the influence of the modes of nature and becomes situated on the platform, liberated platform, spiritual platform. so the modes of nature, they will always influence us, or keep us controlled unless we take shelter we put ourselves under the influence of the control of the spiritual energy. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, there's another verse where Krishna says, Mahatmana Sumam Parta Devam Pakati Lashada. The great souls, they are always under the influence of the spiritual energy, under the influence of my personal energy. Krishna personally takes care of those persons who have surrendered to him. And that means they are completely under the control of the internal energy of Krishna. This is actually a secret, how devotees act. They're completely under the protection of the internal energy. There's another verse where Krishna also says that one should, one who surrenders and meditates, serves him with love and meditates on his transcendental form. He gives them what he needs and he carries to them, it says in the Bible, he carries to them what they lack and preserve what they have. There was a great personality once. His name was Arjuna Acharya, great sage. That sage was very attached to reading Bhagavad Gita. He was reading Bhagavad Gita every day. And when he came to that verse, Yoga Kshema Vahami Ham, that I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have, he says, that is not possible. That Krishna comes and carries to the devotee what he lacks. This is too much. This is not even necessary. Why should Krishna do that? So he crossed it out. Bargain. And then he left home. So after a while, two little children came and knocked on the door. And the Arjuna Acharya's wife opened the door, and these little children came in, and one was crying. And he said, "We just met your husband on the way, and he beat me." And they brought some vegetables. They had a basket. They had a basket. So they had a basket full of fruits and grains and all that. And then he told me to go his home, take the basket, and he beat me. And then his wife was very, she couldn't believe it, that my husband, who is he's so soft-spoken, and he's a Brahmin, he's a great sage, how can he beat a child on the street? Apart, it's a child he's not even related to. He does not even a family member or something like that. And then the child said, "But believe me, look, no." And he showed his shoulder, and there was some mark from the beating. So then the child said, "Oh, now we go because we're very afraid of Arjuna Acharya." They ran away. And then after a while, Arjuna Acharya came back to his home, and his wife told him, "Look, how is it possible? What she did." He came back and she was eating. And that was by itself was impossible, because by Vedic standard, the wife never eats before the husband, before she cooked for the husband and served the husband on that. Faithful wife, usually you did that. So when he came home and he saw his wife was eating, he couldn't believe it. And he said, what happened to you? How come you're eating? How come you didn't wait for us for me to serve my food first?" And he said, "No, you are cruel. You beating children on the street, and I'm not. I don't want to. I don't know what else she said, but that was something. Don't want to serve you anymore." And then he said, "Well, what? I beat children on the street? How did you get to know this? This is a lie." And then she said, "No, two little children came here, and they brought food." "What? They brought? No, you told them to bring the food here, and And he said, what, you're making up another story? No. And then she said, no, they came here. And then one of the little boys said, you beat him on the shoulder. And he showed me the mark. It's not a lie. And then this Arjuna Chaya, he started thinking very deeply. And he asked, how did these two little boys look? And then she said, yeah, the one that you beat was darkish. No? And then he realized, oh no! Krishna and Balaram had come to my home. And why had they come? Well, Krishna gave him the understanding. I don't know how he got to know this, but he realized that they had just come. No, Krishna had come to show him that the verse was true. That he actually comes to preserve, he actually comes, carries to the devotees what they lack. In this way he had brought him food. And to show him, to show him by example that he actually does it. And that, and because he had crossed this out of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna had become very hurt. It was like beating Krishna. Interesting. The same thing happened with I don't remember who it was. It was a devotee of Lord Chaitanya, and he was reading the Bhagavatam. And then he found one verse, and this verse, famous verse, I think it's the second chapter, where mukti is defined, liberation is defined. So this devotee, he had just become, I think it was Sarvabhauma Acharya, he had just become a devotee, because before he was a philosopher, and he was a scholar before. So then, when he came across the word mukti in the Bhagavatam, he couldn't stand the word mukti anymore. And he crossed it out, and he put bhakti. But Lord Chaitanya became very disturbed, chastised him. Then he had dared to change the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because actually the Bhagavatam is perfect. And even when the Bhagavatam uses this kind of terminology that the impersonal also use, it's not that the Bhagavatam is wrong, but the impersonal is actually use these words in the wrong sense, with imperfect understanding. Anyway, I want to stop here. Is there any question? We didn't come to any conclusion, but anyway, so it's a special day today. Any questions? Yeah?
My view is that, that if somebody doesn't perform Krishna or the Bhakti Yoga properly, then he is unhappy and probably unnatural, something becomes unhappy. But on the other hand, it's also that the devotee also is, he will get also some problems and has to suffer from this problem.
But the devotee always has an alternative. No? The devotee always, like we as devotees, for example, we have this word anyway. No? Actually, we only can use this word anyway. No? Because we always have, we can always say, anyway, so we continue anyway, we go on chanting Hare Krishna. When it becomes too intense, we just chant Hare Krishna and depend on Krishna. And that makes us blissful again.
But how can I know if I have to change something in my spirituality, because I did something wrong and therefore I'm not happy, or if it's only the suffering
that
I get to become purified?
Why don't you ask? No, the best thing is always to ask.
To ask others?
Ask somebody who knows. Am I doing something wrong? But actually, another thing is, isn't it true that when devotees undergo tribulations, problems from outside forces or criticism, isn't that? Mm-hmm. And if we just do our best, try our best, then sometimes when we look back, we see it as blissful. Isn't it? Because actually fighting for Krishna is bliss. It's actually blissful. Maybe at the time when all this trouble is there, we don't see it like that. But looking back, it's, you know, all these austerities that we undergo for Krishna are actually blissful. Isn't it? Maybe not at the exact time. You know, we might not see it as we don't have a complete, I would say, a complete picture, mm-hmm. you know, of the situation. If we maintain our sadhana properly, you know, if we follow the principles properly, we chant good rounds, we maintain a good sadhana, then we can just actually surpass practically anything. But the problem is when devotees sometimes have problems, or when there's big disturbances, instead of taking shelter in Krishna, sometimes they have the tendency, especially when they're very neophyte, not very stable, now to take shelter in other things. Isn't it? Just like last year, when all this trouble started in Germany, instead of taking shelter in Krishna, many persons started to criticize and to, you know, find faults in everybody, even in Prabhupada. Mm-hmm. Instead of just taking shelter in the process, in the holy name, the deities. Huh? What do you think? Huh? But it's a fact. Not that, like for example, Srila Prabhupada. Hmm? We know many photos where Prabhupada was very serious. No? So we might also say, well, Prabhupada was very serious, he was not always happy. But actually Prabhupada was always blissful. Even when he was fighting, he was actually blissful. It was a blissful fight. He was very determined. So we just said, you know. Anyway, Krishna doesn't leave us many alternatives. You know. Actually, Krishna always helps us to, you know, to surrender more and more and more. If we don't surrender, then until we surrender, until we become completely dependent on Krishna. And that actually makes us happy.
Back to the past, you mentioned that tapas.
And every time we undergo a test, you know, it might be difficult when we are right in the middle of it. You know, but when we passed it, you know, it's really big. No, we see it different, isn't it? Huh?
I hope so.
You don't feel blissful? You're very blissful. Huh?
Now I'm blissful in that program.
I always see you as a blissful person. You're always full of energy, enthusiastic, blissful, even inspiring others. You know? Isn't it? Isn't she inspiring everybody else?
Yes.
So how can you not be blissful if you don't inspire? How can you inspire anybody else if you're not blissful? Why are you inspired? Because she's blissful, isn't it?
Yes. Beautiful devotee.
Yeah, because she's blissful. Yeah?
Sometimes we go through very heavy moments, the test in our faith. Yeah. we are always blissful, but sometimes it's like, well, Krishna tests us.
Right? Yeah, so Krishna wants to see.
Yes.
No? If you're really serious or not. And then he just lets you, no? And you, no other shelter. You're just hanging in space, and there's nothing you can grab onto. Mm. Only Krishna, oh Krishna. And that's what Krishna wants.
So have more faith.
Yeah. Just like Prabhupada used to say, when things become very difficult, the qualities of devotees come out. No, the real face, how is it? The real, das wahre Gesicht. When we put under pressure. And when devotees put under pressure, there's no other shelter for him than Krishna. And he feels very blissful that there's no other shelter than Krishna. No? Queen Kunti felt so blissful. In the middle of the forest. Surrounded by so much dangers, problems, completely unprotected, with her five sons living in the forest, in the jungle. And after, when all these problems were over, and there were all the demons were killed in the battlefield, and all that, and they had incomparable power, and position, and fame, and prestige. What was she doing? She was praying to Krishna, please Krishna, put us into the same difficulties again. Because now that these difficulties are not there anymore, we tend to forget our dependence on you. And it was more blissful for her. All the great devotees, when you look at their lives, they were fighting. They were fighting all the time. Just like I gave the example this morning or someone sometimes. No, Arjuna, look at the position that he was in. He was also fighting. All the devotees are fighting. And if it's not with external forces, they're fighting with their mind, they're fighting with Maya. They're fighting with their senses. What do you think? What is your?
I'm only wondering that after 10 years when you're practicing Krishna consciousness or practicing Sahaja Bhakti, that you come to the conclusion that everything is
useless.
Not useless.
Artificial.
You should be more natural like this and that.
Yeah, smoke dope. More natural. Natural dope.
And my question is how you can protect yourself.
Bio dope.
How you can protect yourself from that you can, after 10 years or like this, and come to this conclusion?
Well, you know, somebody has been practicing for 10 years, and he has these problems. This problem is a different problem than a neophyte has. And it has more to it than what we see, that is manifest before us. You know, if somebody after so many years has a problem, something is there it's like an iceberg. You know? So that little part comes out of the water, but the bigger part is under water. Just like it says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when we water the creep of devotional service, we have to be very, very careful about weeds that grow at the same time. We have to actually, it's not, Krishna consciousness means that you, just like it says in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Bhakti Yoga is also Buddhi Yoga. No, Buddhi Yoga. Buddhi Yoga means that you have to make use of your intelligence also. You have to develop a very good intelligent discrimination. One way you see what is favorable, what is not favorable, what is Maya, what is not Maya. And that goes further, deeper and deeper and deeper. Not many things that the devotee doesn't see in the beginning because he's so grass and so, how you say, so.